Hello, and welcome to another episode of Radio Free Nintendo. My name is Evan Birchfield. We have reached a momentous time as gamers, a time where bias loyalty is thrown aside and internet forums are ripe with rumors. It's a rare occurrence that repeats itself every few years, and each time it feels bigger than the last. Nintendo is releasing a Zelda game. The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess for Wii is going to be released in a mere 2 weeks, and has already been called the Game of the Year by anonymous internet dweebs, and they very well may be right. In order to fully investigate the importance of this topic, I am joined today by reviews editor Jonathan Metz, brand new site director Stephen Windyman Rodriguez, and previews editor Carl Castaneda.
Did you practice that in front of a mirror or something?
You may have noticed that the leadership here at Planet GameCube has changed a bit. Johnny, you are no longer our site director. Could you tell everyone what you used to do as site director and how things are going to be changing around here?
That's correct, Evan. Let me tell you all about my new position. But this is the last time we let you write the intro ahead of time. Anyway, what's going on here is I've actually been thinking about this changeover for about a year. It started around Christmas time last year, and it took a long time to talk to people and kind of get a feel for who was interested in this job, who would be able to do it. Some people were interested, but because of, like, you know, changes in their life, because of getting a new job or finishing school or whatever, they just decided that they couldn't do it. And I realized early on that asking someone to do what I was doing, everything that I was doing, was probably unreasonable. Because even when I first started this job, when I took over when Billy left, I wasn't doing as much as I have been. I kind of, as the years went on, I figured out what I was good at, what I enjoyed doing, and I just kind of piled things onto myself, because sometimes it was because I couldn't find anybody else to do it. Sometimes it was just because I enjoyed doing it, and I was willing to deal out enough time to take care of it. So I thought it was probably unlikely that I could just completely shift over what I was doing to one person. So what I decided to do was I wrote down basically a list of everything that I do and how much time it takes me every week to do it. And I looked at some of the similarities in that stuff, and I started to group them together. And I ended up with basically three or four different jobs split up from what I was doing as director. One of those was director, which is I basically look at as a managerial position. So basically, if you kind of remove everything else that I do, what's left is in the director job is someone who is in charge of things, who works with people, who plans coverage and makes sure that it gets done, who works with Nintendo on various things like this event that was in Redmond this week. So that's one job, and it's a big job, but when you take these other things away from it, I don't think it's nearly as daunting as it would be otherwise. The second job was PR coordinator. I've actually been doing PR coordinator duties since probably back when I was previews editor. So 5 years or so. I mean, well before Billy left the site. And before I started doing that, nobody was really doing it. Billy was working with Nintendo directly, and other than that, we were not really in contact with companies. So this was one of the things that Billy and I had talked about back then as a way to kind of add legitimacy to the site, to help us get better coverage, to help us cover more games that, you know, that normally maybe we wouldn't have, to kind of discover new things and to present new games to the readers. Sometimes that means presenting a game to readers that we previously didn't have much interest in, but maybe it's worth presenting. You know, maybe it's a very cool game and we want to tell people about it. Well, if we don't work with these publishers, then that's less likely to happen. So, I think you can tell a pretty big difference in the comprehensiveness. Is that a word? in the level of thoroughness in our coverage since we started doing that. And we don't have the best relationship with every company, partly because I wasn't very good at the job. You know, it was, at least we had someone doing it. And actually the guy who kind of gave me the initial training and the initial push-off is a guy named Scott Fink, who did PR duties for NintendoWorks.com.
And Nintendoworks, how we miss thee.
What?
I really regret the Nintendorks having not being quite so active anymore. They used to be the force in Nintendo joke gaming news.
Yeah, and Scott was an interesting guy there because Nintendorks is about as illegitimate of a Nintendo side as you could get. And here's a guy who's trying to get them interview. And Scott was really good at his job. I mean, I remember one E3, this was probably like 2001 or 2002. He set up a couple of the guys at Nintendorks to interview Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen. Because they had a game coming out on Game Boy Color or some shit. And I was talking to them afterwards, and I was like, I mean, these are guys who had made hundreds of Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen jokes on their website. And I was like, how did you guys handle this without just cracking up? And, you know, they were like, well, it ended up being kind of a serious interview because they got really starstruck when they met them, you know. But that's the kind of stuff Scott would do. I mean, he was setting up developer interviews and things on a site that really was not the place for that stuff. But, I mean, you know, bless his heart. I mean, he was doing a great job at it. So, anyway, the third job was reviews editor, which is something that I've been doing actually probably going back to when I was managing editor, if not, probably around then. When I started looking at reviews, I started to try to coordinate when people were doing reviews, who was going to do it, what reviews we were going to run on the site, and, you know, trying to proofread, revise, and suggest things for the reviews when they're written before they get posted. And that's a pretty big job. It's very time-consuming in the fall. And if you're also doing PR coordinator stuff and director stuff on top of the review stuff in the fall, it gets to be – it's really hard to get anything else done. It's almost like a full-time job. And the last thing, and this is kind of like a half job, but I was shipping everything out to people. So whenever we got products like review games, things like that from publishers, I had everything mailed to me, and then I was mailing it back out all over the world, really, to different staff members who had to deal with that stuff. And it's not a difficult job, but it takes up a certain amount of time, and you have to be very consistent and reliable with it. At first I thought that would be a duty of the PR coordinator, but then once I decided that Evan would be the PR coordinator, we found out that the logistics of it probably wouldn't work. So we ended up finding another person to do that, which is Mike Gaiman, or Pale, Pale Zero.
His name's pronounced Gaiman, actually.
Is it really?
Even, Gaiman? Yeah, I wish his name was pronounced Gaiman, but no, it's Gaiman. Yeah. He apparently,
he's got the best name ever.
He really has a great name, and he has completely ignored the ability to go by Mike Gaming.
That's too bad, because, I mean, if you think about it, you really have the choice in how your name is pronounced.
Yeah.
I mean, Gaming with Gammon, I mean, that's
if
awesome.
If you want to change it, who's to say, I mean, it's your name. You can pronounce it however
you want to. That's something I've been saying to Carl for the longest time.
You know what? You know what, Evan? You know what, Birchfield? All right, get the hell out of here.
Actually, no, that's Evan Birchfier, all right? It's not Birchfield. Birchfier. It's French.
Oh, man.
Every day I get close to throwing Oregon right into the ocean.
Gosh. Uh-huh. Sure. You and Lex Luthor. Anyways.
So I probably dragged this out too far, but basically what we ended up with was Steven was going to be director. Evan was going to be PR coordinator. I would be reviews editor. And then Mike is doing the shipping. Mm-hmm. So basically what I've done is the job that I'm doing now as reviews editor, I've been doing for years, but I've kind of sloughed off everything else. So now I can really concentrate on it better. And I'm excited about it. It's going to give me a little more time to work on school and some other things, but I'm still going to be heavily involved in the site, especially this time of year. And I get to stick around and help out you guys with whatever you need. Mm-hmm. And lest we not forget, a few months ago, this is not part of the current movement, but probably 6 months ago, we named Carl as our new previews editor, and he's been doing a really nice job on that too.
So yeah, so all of
I'm also the rumors editor.
Yeah,
just to shine my app a little bit more.
So there's all these different promotions, and things have been shaken up quite a bit. Steven, how have you handled? How have you appreciated being director so far?
Well, I've been with PGC since, what, 2002, was it?
Something and, like that.
Yeah, it's been a while, and I remember during the week Johnny asked me to be director, I started thinking about being director, and it was only then when I realized how much time and how much effort I've put into the site over the years. And I thought, you know, I am putting this much effort into this site. Why not put in that little more? You know, I can be a director. I'm pretty sure I'm the one for the job because I've put so much time and effort into this thing. And I know how everything worked, and I had so many ideas, so sure. Yeah, I mean, why not? I can do it.
Let's just make it clear, he had no idea what he was getting into. Had no idea how anything worked at the time.
Yes, and for the record, I still have no idea what I'm getting into.
So, Stephen, am I allowed to mention that at the same time it was because you had just recently ceased employment at THQ?
Yes.
As a beta tester, which you've been doing for quite some time, and so it actually opened up a kind of a time gap for you.
Yes, it's actually kind of funny you mentioned that, because at the time I was working at THQ, which I did for about 2 years, a little more than 2 years. I was also working at PGC, and obviously during that time I couldn't post anything THQ related, because that would be, you know, giant conflict of interest, and that would get me fired from my real job. But at the time we kind of had this, you know, people kind of come and go all the time in QA, and it seemed all the good testers that were there, you know, left and to go on to bigger and better things. And so I remember the day I left, I thought to myself, gee, maybe I'm also going on to bigger and better things. And a couple of weeks later, Johnny called me up and said, hey man, you want to be director? And I was like, well,
yeah,
okay.
Except,
so now you can talk about Avatar and SpongeBob as much as you want.
Oh. Yeah, yeah, exciting! Woot! Not
that's,
to diss
that's
on
a future
too.
Podcast.
Yeah, yeah, because I'm the one in charge of reviewing SpongeBob for Wii. Let me just tell you, I played it at E3.
For the sake of editorial integrity, I think I will defer any comments on games I've worked on previously.
Okay, that's a good idea as well. So yeah, and let me just say that as PR coordinator, I've only been doing the job for I've been doing it very hard for the last 2 weeks, and I've been doing minimal things for the past month and a half. And I'm surprised at how much time it's taking, and with the podcast on top of it, I'm wondering when the money starts coming in on these jobs. But apparently, never.
Checks in the mail, Evan.
Okay, great. Thanks.
You know,
boss.
That's Wendy's problem now. So. I don't care.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, that's great sympathy. Well, anyways, let's get on to actual discussion of the news. The best thing we do here at Planet GameCube. I'm sorry, guys. No, we're not going to tell you what the new name of the website is. I wish I could. I asked if we could. And the fact that that my suggestion of Super Crazy Nintendo Funhouse Planet was totally rejected, it's kind of got me a little bummed out. So
yeah, the domain was already taken. So,
anyways, one of the things that was announced recently was the exact amount of the exact games that are actually going to be on the Virtual Console at launch. So these are the games you'll be able to download, and it's a handful, quite a substantial amount of Nintendo games. Only two Super NES games, that's F-Zero and SimCity, and only one N64 game, which is Super Mario 64. Now, this is a sparse list compared to what Japan's getting. And also, when it comes to Genesis titles, Japan is only being charged $6 or six, however many yen that comes out to be, the same amount of points, 600 points for a Genesis game, whereas we have to spend 800, which is $8. And it doesn't necessarily feel as though it's fair, the amount of games that they're getting compared to us. What do you guys think about that? I want to start with Carl.
Well, I mean, when you first look at the list, you have to realize it's around 30 games, which is pretty nice as far as, like, a launch. But at the same time, a lot of the games that you don't see on there seem like obvious choices. Like, I don't think we're getting Super Mario Bros. On the NES. That is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, we're not getting Metroid. We're not getting A Link to the Past on SNES. And really, I mean, is anyone really going to download SimCity for SNES?
Yes.
Well, I think there's quite a few people that will. I mean, I played SimCity on Super NES. I won't download it for $8 right away.
Exactly.
Not first day.
As far as like Genesis games being cheaper, I don't think that's really that big a deal. I mean, A, it's only, what, $2 or a $2 difference? It's $6 in Japan and $8 here. And I guess we might have expected the price to be different. I mean, in different regions, you have different economies, therefore different pricing structures. Yeah. So I guess we can't really complain about that. But it would be nice to have more games.
Yeah. What, how do you feel, Johnny?
To me, the problem is not really the number of games. I think it's odd that it's so skewed towards the NES. To me, the problem is the selection, because I mean, look at Super Mario 64 being the only N64 game at launch. Makes no sense. Yes, it may very well be the best N64 game, but it came out 2 years ago on the DS. And look, you don't, you know, when Nintendo's launching a new Zelda game for Wii that's heavily influenced by Ocarina of Time, doesn't it make a little bit of sense to release Ocarina of Time with a virtual console?
It may.
It does to me. I think the Super NES selection is kind of abysmal. F-Zero is a great game, but I don't have any interest in downloading it. SimCity, actually, maybe, because SimCity for $8, there's a lot of gameplay there. I mean, if you're the kind of guy who can zone out on SimCity, and I am, that's kind of enticing, actually. It's not a bad choice. But, just the fact that there are only two games there is absolutely ridiculous. And I don't know, the kind of oddball selection here and the limited number of upper-tier games as far as the more modern consoles like Super NES and N64, it makes me think if maybe this list is influenced by technical issues, kind of like Xbox 360's backwards compatibility, where every time they release a list of the games that have been added for compatibility, it's like bizarre stuff, you know? It's like things that nobody would want to play on their 360. And the reason that happens is basically they upgrade the emulator that sits on your hard drive, and they design it around two or three major games, and then they check all the other games and see which ones also became compatible through that upgrade. And that's why you end up with like Halo 2 and Barbie's Horse Adventure, you know? So, and I wonder if that's the case here. Like, maybe the reason that we only have one N64 game is because the N64 emulator, of course, there are different emulators for each one of these systems on Virtual Console. Maybe the N64 emulator is just not really up to snuff yet. And Mario 64 is the first game, it's the game that they concentrated on. I mean, they showed it at E3. So, it makes sense. Maybe this is the game that they've been working on for so long, and it's the only one that they can verify works 100% right now, and they're just in the process of testing a lot of other games to see what works with it so far, and they just haven't validated them yet.
Could this end up being yet another one of those situations where Nintendo has this great idea and then undersupports it? I mean, this is a selling point, and we're not seeing it being a selling point, at least to people like us, yet. What do you think about that, Steven?
Well, I have to disagree with you on that point, because this is easy money for Nintendo. All they have to do is dig out a ROM, slap it online, and they get money. And I think, I don't agree that they're only releasing, what, like 29, 30 games in the U.S., and what is it, about 50 in Japan?
Well, that's counting the Genesis titles and anything else. This is when it comes to Nintendo's only, it's under 20.
Yeah, but I think I know what they're going for. They don't want to overwhelm maybe people with games. They want to say, okay, here's what you can start out with. And they also want to have a chance to add games as they go. Because, you know, Xbox Live is doing Xbox Live Wednesdays, where they come out with a new game every Wednesday. If they released them all at once, people would not have anything else to look forward to.
Certainly,
You kind of have to hold that carrot out in front of people saying, This is what we're starting out with, but more is coming. So check back next week to see if we add your favorite game.
But how many? We're talking about Super NES having the largest library of classic, amazing games for any Nintendo system. And we're not seeing any of them being released on day one. And we don't even know if they're going to be promised in December at all.
Yes, that's my other point I wanted to make, is the games that are here are quite pathetic. Especially compared to what they're getting in Japan. I mean, all we get is F-Zero and SimCity. Japan gets F-Zero, R-Type, Super Castlevania 4, Contra 3, Street Fighter 2, Donkey Kong Country, Mario World, Link to the Past, Fire Emblem, what the hell? Why do we not get those games? People will buy those things right away in America. But Nintendo's just giving us SimCity and F-Zero.
They obviously have different business models for the different regions, and they think that we're going to buy them in a more steady pace, whereas the Japanese will buy them right off.
Here are Nintendo's business models. In Japan, smart. In America, stupid.
Probably. There could be some credence to that. They could also just be thinking that the way that we work as consumers is on a steady basis, and that they're getting into the microtransaction ideal, where it's just a little bit here, a little bit here, a little bit there, take a little bit as you go. Whereas they'll line up day one for the DS Lite for the new pink color in Japan. They will go mad crazy for a pink one.
Macrotransactions.
Yeah. well,
nice.
That, I was kind of going to make a more comparisons to Xbox Live with microtransactions. This is Nintendo's first time doing this too, so maybe they want to ease into it as much as they think we need to.
Sure.
Ease into it.
And they might be trying to they're overestimating the amount of demand, so that way they don't overcalculate how many are going to be downloaded on day one.
And they don't want to just as easily things. Add 100 games the next day. We don't know that.
Yeah.
And by the way, before we say too much, before we badmouth NOA too much compared to NCL, we are getting the Wii first, like 2 weeks earlier. And this is the second major system from Nintendo in a row that this has happened with. So, you know, I think clearly Reggie, as the new president of NOA, has some pretty significant sway over the overall company decisions. You know, I don't know if it's... I mean, if you look at the sales between America and Japan for DS, I'm not really sure that launching here a couple weeks earlier than in Japan was such a great idea, but it makes us feel special.
Certainly.
Well, I mean, it definitely says that Nintendo's at least trying more to get the American market.
Sure, yeah.
Just the fact that we're getting the lion's share of the first shipment of Wii says something. Sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, well, I want to move away from Virtual Console and onto the most important thing from the past week. Nintendo of America invited several journalists, including our news site director, Stephen Rodriguez, up to their headquarters in Seattle to speak with, or was it Redmond?
Yeah, Redmond, Washington.
Redmond, kind of nearby Seattle, to discuss and get to play The Legend of Zelda for 2 whole days. We wanted to get Steven on to the podcast to just tell us more. We want a direct... What I particularly want is a direct comparison between what you played at E3, which we all know I didn't really like very much. I want to get a direct comparison between that and what you got to play recently.
Well, E3 wasn't so good. This one, what I played recently, was really good.
So wait, you're willing to admit that E3 wasn't so good?
Yeah.
Because no one said that back in the day, when I was standing there alone saying, no, this didn't play well.
It was good. Like, we said, well, it's a Zelda game. We'll overlook it just because it's a Zelda game. But, as you know, just about every Wii game at E3, all the controls were kind of spotty. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. You had the sensor bar problem, people... depending on how far or close away you were, the hardware wasn't final. Some of the games were eh. So obviously, Zelda wasn't shown in the best light there. But the one thing, and I mentioned this in my impressions, my controller spoiler-free impressions, by the way, the one thing I took away from E3, despite the controls being a little buggy and the item selection with the D-pad kind of not to my liking, the one thing I took away from E3 was, if they can get this remote pointing down for the aiming, this game is going to be perfect. And I thought about that when I got the chance to go up to NOA. The first thing I tried doing was remote pointing. And they nailed it. It is awesome. It is perfect. It's the best thing since sliced bread.
Hey, Steven, this wasn't clear to me in your impressions. What is, can you describe specifically what is the difference between the implementation of the remote pointing from E3 to now, especially, you know, I'm not talking about like moving Navi all over the place for no reason, but like for shooting arrows or slingshot or whatever. I mean, what is it that's really different? Because, I mean, I know you say it's better, but why is it better?
At E3, when you went to aim something, you got this big, circle. With like gray area on the outside, and if you move the aiming cursor to the gray area outside that circle, the screen would move
a lot.
So it's kind of what
really fast.
So it's kind of like how Red Steel was set up. If there's like a bounding box, and you move it outside the bounding box, the camera tracks. What they did for the final version is that you can move the pointer anywhere you want on the screen, and the camera won't move unless you move it off to the edge, up, down, left, or right, as you're aiming. What you can also do is the analog stick. You can move the analog stick to the left or right, and that will track the camera left or right and keep your cursor where you're aiming.
Ah.
So you have many options how you want to aim. You can pick up the remote pointer and nudge it to the left or right a little bit to get that fine aim going down, or you can not move the remote pointer and move the analog stick to the left or right to move the camera for the cursor to line up to. So you have
That's
a lot of
intuitive.
Options.
So did that feel more natural?
It feels so perfect that you will not want to go back to regular analog stick aiming. And actually, Nintendo included an option for you to use the analog stick exclusively for aiming. So if you are stupid, you can use that option.
So would you say that, I buy Zelda and I don't really like the Wii controls because I'm retarded. Are there enough, traditional options within it that it would equate using a GameCube controller?
Yes and no. Yes, you can switch the aiming to the analog stick. You can't do a free camera like you probably will be able to in the GameCube version.
That's really too bad.
Hey, Wendy, let me ask you this. Don't you think instead of having a free camera in the GameCube version, it's more likely they would use the C-stick to assign items like they are using the D-pad for right now?
No.
No?
Because you still get X, Y, and Z on the GameCube controller. I mean, the Twilight Princess on the GameCube should have basically the same control scheme as Wind Waker. Because I don't see how they can improve on that for a GameCube controller.
So you don't think there'll be any analog to swapping out items to the B trigger on the Wii remote?
What do you mean?
Well, if you're only using X, Y, and Z for items in the GameCube version, then you can only hold 3 items at a time. But in the Wii version, you can hold 4.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So how does that work? Because, you know, what button are you going to be using?
Well, no. Here's the trade-off, though. In the GameCube, just think Wind Waker.
Right.
X, Y, and Z.
Right.
When you press the button, the weapon comes out immediately. The item comes out immediately.
Right.
In Twilight Princess on the Wii, if you press the D-pad button, it has to swap to the B-trigger first.
Right.
Then you hit the B-trigger. So you don't quite get immediate access to your item. It's sort of an indirect item assignment. It's fast. You can switch it and use it, you know, just a moment after the other, but it's not instantaneous.
It seems like a major advantage for the Wii version to me, because not only are you holding 4 items at a time instead of 3, but you're always using your items with a comfortable button. Like, for me on Wind Waker, I always kept the actual Wind Waker item on the X button, because you need it often, but the X button is not comfortable for me to use as an action button a lot.
Yeah.
So,
and
you know,
that Nintendo must have, you know, figured that out really quick, because I bet a lot of people were complaining about that. The D-pad is not good for action buttons. It's great for option buttons.
Did anybody bring up to Nintendo at all that the Wii Remote just does not feel well designed if we're going to talk about having game developers actually assign functions to the D-pad? Because it doesn't seem as though it was in any way intended for that when it was designed.
It was, to tell you the truth. What else are you going to use it for?
To turn it left, to turn it sideways and use it as a D-pad
on
the left.
Yes, but I mean holding it in the vertical pointing position. What else are you going to use it for but other than, you know, button suppress?
I would say that's exactly my point. If you're going to, if you are actually going to use it in that way, it shouldn't be where it is. It is too high. It's unusable, I think, except for down.
See, that's exactly what I was saying, because you have immediate access to down, kind of medium access to left and right, and a very slow access to up. And that's exactly how you can set it up for items in Twilight Princess. Up on the D-pad is talking to Midna, and you don't really use that often. So the time you do need to use it, it's not that much of a hassle to go up there and stretch it, because you don't need to hit it right away. You can just,
sure.
Talk to Midna, stop, hit the button. It's fine.
I'm fairly convinced that there's going to be some very bad third-party games that use really bad controls in that way. They're going to assign everything to the D-pad because
they
want 5 buttons.
Within the first year, there are going to be so many ports that just copy and paste control options onto the Wii Remote. They're not going to design games around the different And it's not just the buttons, but the controller layout. You can't just put all your assignment, like, you know, if a game uses the D-pad for something, you can't just plop it onto the Wii controller's D-pad the same way. You need to consider, well, you might have an easier time pressing down, so we might want to put the most used option on down. You can't just... Mm-hmm.
And that's what it was in Metroid. Yeah. Missiles were on down.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Wendy, I want to move on and talk about one other thing about Zelda before we wrap up. And that's what your impressions were of just the story. And I know that you're not... You don't want to give out any spoilers on our podcast, and that's okay.
Link saves Zelda. I just want to know... You... Oh, no.
I'm totally suing your ass.
Oh man, I'm upset. No, I want to hear. I want to hear because you kind of described, although you were in detail. I wanted. You had described earlier to me how you were feeling when playing it, and I just want to hear, without getting into details, what you felt.
Man,
is that vague? Is that a dumb question?
No, it just sounds like. Tell me how you feel.
Yeah, it sounds like a psychologist.
When your father drank.
No, seriously, this is. I'm trying to put this into words, but you know, okay, let me do it this way. Ocarina of Time, you know, the beginning, everybody's happy, you know, all the kids are playing in the forest, you go to the castle, you know, things are cool, and then you go in the castle, and things start a little, you know, lonely, dark kind of thing, and then you go 7 years in the future, and all, like, holy crap, you know, hell, ring around Death Mountain, zombies walking around everywhere. It's kind of got that evil tone to it. Now, in Twilight Princess, it's got that evil tone, but it's also got very, very, very melancholy, a very, very melancholy feeling to it. Everybody's sad. Everybody's very, very, it's a very emotional.
So by
game.
Melancholy, you mean emo?
No, it's going to pull on your heartstrings. I can say that. Every single emotion you can think of, you'll probably feel in this game. I mean, I went through a lot of the range the time I was there. I was happy.
We need to qualify this, though. We need to qualify this. I need to know, Steven, how many times have you cried at a video game? Like, give me a number.
I'm trying to think.
Trying to count them on all your hands and toes? Is that what it is? Because if it's that many, that's a problem. That's not common.
Actually, it's kind of nice that you asked that question. But the answer to it up to this point is zero. But I have the feeling that I will be crying multiple times during my time through Twilight Princess.
Well, that's a positive impression.
Yes, seriously, this game is serious
business. On the upside, Wendy, when Link you know, grabs Zelda and bends her over and gives her, like, a long soap opera kiss. Did you feel, like, kind of a warm feeling inside? Did you feel stirred?
Oh, I'm sure he felt stirred.
For our listeners at home, that didn't happen, at least not in the first 10 hours.
It was at the 11th hour. That's the next thing that was on the agenda.
Hey, you know, just saying that didn't happen is a spoiler.
Oh, no.
It's a reverse.
Nailed! Spoiler. You're nailed. You know, Wendy, I have a quick question. I've heard that Midna laughs out of the controller speaker and that it's really creepy and annoying. How would you compare it to Navi saying, "Hey!" in Ocarina of Time?
Look! Listen!
Navi was just completely annoying. When Midna laughs through the speaker, it's kind of a novelty that she does it through the speaker, but it actually doesn't get old. And she does it a lot. Actually.
It sounds awesome. I really can't wait.
You can
to
turn it off, though, right? You can turn it off.
Yeah, you can the speaker. And
okay,
you can,
awesome.
Carl doesn't care how awesome it is. He wants to turn it off.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's not going to be awesome whatsoever. It just sounds terrible. You're playing this game, and this girl is laughing at you the entire time. You know, that's one of my nightmares is to be playing a game and having a girl laugh at me. Why would I want this in the new Zelda?
I can predict already what Johnny's score is going to be for Legend of Zelda. I think it's going to be a 7.
12.
Pros. Amazing Zelda game. 9 dungeons. Most beautiful thing I've ever played. Cons. Midna laughs at you every 5 seconds. 3 points right there. I still am disappointed that Nintendo really doesn't want to put GameCube controls in there because I may want to play through the game again and be able to look at anything I want with a C-stick. At this point, it's probably not going to affect me too much.
Evan, you can, for the low, low price of $49.95.
Evan, I mean, it's not like you can't look around in the game, because you can still get the first-person look around,
mm-hmm.
which you would probably be doing if you wanted to look at stuff in detail a free camera anyway.
Yeah. Wind Waker was, to me, that was one of the most advantageous things about the game, was that you could look anywhere, and they were able to design the game with that in mind, so it really did help out. But, you know...
Yeah, we were kind of spoiled with that free camera.
Yeah, and maybe it doesn't bode well for all of the games that are going to be coming out for Wii. Maybe it doesn't bode well for the future of Wii as far as camera control. Like, they had to specifically design Super Mario Galaxy so that you didn't need a camera control. How's that going to affect third-party developers?
I'm worried about it.
Well, think about it, though. If they design a game that doesn't need camera control, doesn't that mean the camera is usually good?
Yeah, but Nintendo can do it. Nintendo can do it because they can make a game that's set on many different planets. But not necessarily. Can every developer do something like that?
Doesn't Ultimate Alliance on Wii have a neat camera control where you twist the nunchuck to spin the camera?
Yeah, I bet that works awesome.
Bloodworth play that? Didn't
yeah, he? But it that kind of stuff, impression. You know, it just doesn't seem like it's going to work. It really doesn't to me.
Yeah. We'll see. Anyways, that's going to wrap it up for our show. I want to thank you very much, all of you, for joining us at Radio Free Nintendo this episode. And we're going to lead you out with some more music by Jason Ricci, as we normally do. And I hope you have a good night. We're looking forward to Zelda as much as you are. So look forward to a couple special episodes, both before and after we launch. Also, if you have any questions, criticisms, or comments, you have a letter that you want us to read on the podcast, please send them to our new address at rfn@planetgamecube.com. Again, that's RFN, Robert Frank Nancy, @planetgamecube.com. Thanks, and have a good night.
Bleach. You know, Carl, instead of watching Bleach, why don't you go drink some Bleach?